pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. It's finally Friday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. All you got to do is text me. Coming up here in just a few, about a half hour, Secretary of State candidate Carolee Dobson. She'll be with us also on the program. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. That's later on in the show. Scrollmarine. My point was that if Mobile improved, traffic between counties could be alleviated.
You're always going to have traffic. If you're not going to have traffic going between Mobile and Baldwin County, you'll have traffic going between downtown and West Mobile. The cars are going to be somewhere. And it's just not a, even if like the city of Mobile went in on this, you know, renaissance and became the kind of community where you want to raise a family, not just, you know, live the bachelor lifestyle or whatever. And you wouldn't have enough room or space or housing anyway. So I think it could improve. Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that would help it some. But the cars going in a city the size of Mobile, they're going to go somewhere. But really, I mean, the problem is it's a major national thoroughfare. From the 95-10 split in Jacksonville, Florida, all the way to the Santa Monica Pier, I-10. Cross-country route, transcontinental. And for that reason, you know, just especially now that we're trying to make this a port city, the traffic's going to still be there. But I don't know how much of that traffic's heading east that would use this thoroughfare. But, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I talk about this sometimes on the program, one of my hobbies, I guess. I like to look at old road maps. I have one on my wall here from 1927. It would have predated the causeway. It would have predated the Africatown Bridge. Or what it, you know, it used to be just the Cochrane Bridge. Remember it was that vertical lift bridge, those of you? And the Bacon Tunnel came later. We had ferry systems crossing the Mobile Bay. You had a ferry to Daphne, one to Fairhope. The old Spanish Trail, which is Highway 90, essentially, that was sort of what I-10 is today. And it wasn't finished. I mean, and you could go back and my friend Chip Drago, who used to run a site called Mobile Bay Times, he writes a little bit about it and the push to get that finished. This east-west corridor. So when it came to Mobile back in the day, or via land, you came south on the old federal road. It's still very interesting. I think what you used to take the railroad even, what you used to take the ferry boat up to where the stagecoach up Stapleton. And then you'd go there, and then you'd hit the railroad. The railroad takes you all points north. This is the long story short, 100 years, well, more than 100 years, a problem that the city of Mobile, this part of the state, has been dealing with getting across the Mobile Bay. It's always, we've had some solutions and they've worked for, you know, a few decades, but we never had like a real permanent solution. And then will this be the permanent solution? I don't know. Until there's flying cars. then we're going to be kind of at this, you know, the capacity is always going to be a question. We've been dealing with this, and every solution works for, you know, about 100 years, 50 years or whatever. And then you had to build something bigger and better. So you had the Causeway and the Bankhead Tunnel and the Cochrane Bridge. Then came the Wallace Tunnel. After the Wallace Tunnel, they rebuilt the Cochrane Bridge, the Africatown Bridge. I was little. I was a child. But they used to make the hazardous cargo go all the way up 65, cross through the Delta to come south and get back on I-10 till that bridge was completed. I think Gene was talking about that on the text line yesterday. What an ordeal that was. So, you know, our policymakers, they think they got it figured out. And then things change, traffic changes, and then this solution just isn't viable anymore. It's just not, it's overburdened. Derek, I promise to be good if you do. If you do one for me, one thing for me, please ask Krusty Chris what the state's percentage of the late fees on the toll. Does it all go to bondholders? Do they get a cherry on top as well? What's our split on the late fees? Because that's where the money is, the late fees. All right, well, I here's what I'm worried about, Derek. There's going to be like an administrative fee tacked onto these toll by plates. You're good. Yeah, $7.70 toll. If you do toll by plate, well, we have to access your information, and that costs money. And we're gonna hit you with another $5 to $10. Totally sounds like something. And the way bureaucracy, it's never easy. Mike, being critical of Israel's action isn't necessarily anti-Semitic. I know a lot of kooks, however, are anti-Semitic. But Israel's actions in Gaza have, by definition, and their actions have been genocidal. I think more appropriately anti-Zionist. Look, Mike, and I don't think this Netanyahu government's going to be around forever. I think this era of Israeli history is not necessarily popular with the people there. We're just right now dealing with that. And this isn't a long-term, forever thing. My name, Texter. Why is it a problem to call it Israel? Everybody knows Alabama's governor has to be an idiot. So it's got to be Tubbs. The economy is in shambles, yet Jeff is quiet. Is the economy in shambles? I mean, I've lived through some economic hardships in my life. I don't know what's happening to you. We've seen higher gas prices in our history. We've seen the markets bottom out. We've lived through some economic calamity. This is not shambles. Come on, Jeff. The flaws of democracy have been known for over a millennium. Electing demagogues and trafficking in sophistry is a feature of the system, and it will never go away. Repeal the 17th Amendment. Let me say this about that. Yes, you're right. The flaws of democracy and demagoguery. But I'm not talking about it from the standpoint that this is bad for the country, bad for government. It's bad politically. If your goal is to win elections, if your goal is to have a long-term power structure and advance your ideologies, not just get short-term power grabs, because as we see, Congress doesn't do anything. If you're building a system for the long haul, then these short-term gains you're getting from radicalizing your base, they're not long-standing, are the gains go away and another, if you don't really believe what you're out there talking about, people who really believe it are going to take the saddle here and ride with it. That's the problem with the Democratic Party. I'll just talk about, you know, socializing all these aspects of our life. The Democrats pay lip service to, they don't believe it. Maybe they believe some of it, And they know in an ideal world, maybe that's the way they would do, but they know it's not practical. They know it can't happen. They know it's not something that could ever be enacted into law. But they pay lip service to it. And nothing happens because you elect this person. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to go with somebody who thinks that they can, who really believes this stuff. Like, you failed at giving us free college tuition or paying off my student loans or giving me free or more welfare benefits. You failed at that. You failed at socializing the oil companies. You failed at socializing healthcare. You failed at all of this. So I'm going to go look elsewhere. And that's where these radicals come in. They're like, oh, I believe this, and I think we really can do it. And this guy, look how he votes. He does whatever leadership tells him to do. Then what do you get out of it? It's the same thing with the Alabama legislature. At some point, they're going to overpromise. They're going to tell us how conservative they are. We're going to be looking around going like, that's not really conservative. It's not really what they said they were going to do. We're going to find out that your utility rates aren't going to go down because we reconstituted the Public Service Commission the way that they did after, despite the promises made. They set themselves up for this because people, I mean, as much as we want to, talk about how people have short-term memories, at some point they will start to say, hey, none of the stuff that you talked about on the campaign trail is really part of your business in Montgomery or Washington or whatever. What are you doing up there? What are you doing? This is not what we expected of you. You voted a lot. Well, I had to because this vote went this way and this vote went that way, and we went to get money for our four-lane widening or whatever. But I think, like, real things like that, ultimately, there's a price to be paid. Continues on here. Also, there's no good reason to vote in the runoff primary. No one ran on any issues. All the character assassination and demagoguery was nothing to vote for except for Barry Moore's haircut, Catherine Robertson's endorsements, and Jay Mitchell's quasi-effeminate tough talk against the Muslims. There was stuff to vote for. I think as an educated voter, you've got to kind of see around a lot of that. What you are being advertised is not necessarily the reality. And you see around and you see the reality, and then you vote on that based on that reality. You don't necessarily have to vote on based on what the ads or the flyers or the propaganda say. It's hard. But it requires an understanding. And Alabama politics is hard to understand. That's why, part of the reason I wanted to do this show down here just seems like a place that, yes, you're kind of left out of the Montgomery orbit sometimes. And there's not, like, a real, like, kind of just grasp of what's going on with that. It's where I drank my first beer. 251-343-0106. I think, like, there's an opportunity here to talk about this more, to get voters or get people at least more interested or aware of what's going on. What they do with that is up to them. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happiness on her ain't just for high achievers.
My heroes have always been cowboys. Still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step in back of themselves and their slow moving dreams.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. Caroline Dobson coming up in the next segment, so please make sure you stay tuned for that. Chris Elliott, our returning champion, will be with us as well. Daniel, Jeff, all the people complaining are the same ones who don't want you to get out and vote for local or state reps. Don't complain if you don't vote. A lot of these lawmakers like these low turnouts because it just makes their path to reelection easier. I mean, statistically, low voter engagement, you get away with more. You just get the trade associations and the establishment to bankroll your reelection bid. And maybe you have an opponent, maybe you don't. You just get seen. I mean, this is Nathaniel Ledbetter will say this publicly. It's not about any vote you take. It's just the perception. Hey, I see that guy at the grocery store. Hey, I see that guy at baseball games or football games. I'm going to vote for that guy. Like, he seems an all right dude. And they could go vote for something that, you know, we could talk about on the show. It just seems like a total, like, disqualifier. But no one's paying that close attention. They just see this guy out, and he's, you know, trying to be a part of the community. And that's who they like in Montgomery. They put faith and trust. They don't have time to understand a lot of the legislation or confirmations or anything like that. This seems like a good guy, and he's going to do the right thing. That's just kind of a widespread universal truth throughout Alabama politics, probably with politics in general in a lot of other places. A named texter, what's the difference? MAGA is doing what Trump telling them to do. And what are you, like, huffing glue this morning, texter? Fire Dog, $7 toll charge, $3 convenience fee, $2.50 scenic view fee, 78-cent stamp fee, $6 license picture fee, $5 develop picture fee at Kodak kiosk in the mail, $8 Starbucks coffee while waiting on picture development fee, the total bridge one-way fee, $32.28. That's some math there. A named texter, I hope Doug Jones and or his campaign don't try to do coach the way they did Roy Moore. That from Trouble in Magnolia Springs. That's not going to be a winnable strategy. And it's probably going to make a lot of enemies. It worked with Roy Moore because, A, no one really liked Roy Moore in those circles. And, B, it was a middle of December off-cycle election with a very revved-up Democratic base because of the Donald Trump election 13 months earlier. If he had gone to some of the town halls in the after Trump was elected, I went to two that really stick out of my mind. Bradley Byrne and all of the Planned Parenthood crazies showed up, and they were trying to create this perception that people were mad that Trump was elected. They snuck into TV cameras or whatever. And the other one that was just remarkable, and this was another left-wing group, a lot of Greenpeace types, was Matt Gaetz when he was elected over in the 1st Congressional District in Florida. Matt Gaetz has one of his first town hall meetings at the bowling alley, I believe Pace, at the bar. And CNN was there. I went to that, but you could just sense that this was the angst over Trump winning and not over. They did this with Tom Cotton in Arkansas. They were trying to create this perception that people were already having buyer's remorse just 2 months after the election. And this just wasn't the case. That was the deal there. But the truth of the matter is that the Republicans who were very excited about Trump, they didn't go out and vote. They didn't want to go out and vote for Roy Moore. I mean, no one was excited to vote for Roy Moore except a handful of people. Really, what did the Republicans in, and Roy Moore was a flawed candidate, but it was this. It was trying to force Luther Strange as a U.S. senator in this state. That's what they were trying to do. And the people rejected that. They did not want Governor Bentley picking out who was going to be the U.S. Senator for decades to come. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I've thrown away the blues.
back to the Jeff Porsche Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday, 251-343-0106. State Senator Chris Elliott about an hour from now. Please stick around for that. Joining us now, she is a Republican nominee for Secretary of State here in Alabama, but Caroline Dobson joins us on the line. Caroline, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. You've been making the rounds. I guess I saw Katie Britt's 250 gathering, and then we ran into each other up in DeKalb County. You're still kind of on the campaign trail, technically.
Yes, no, and there have been so many wonderful opportunities of fellowship around the 250th celebration. So it's been great to get together with other Republicans throughout the state and celebrate the freedoms we enjoy as Americans. But also, again, be aware that, in order for us to make it to the 300th anniversary of our country, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. It's a daily fight to make sure that we ensure the benefits of the Constitution that our founding fathers, with God's guidance, ensured for us, that we ensure that to the next generation. And so that's why I've been really grateful that there have been, again, so many opportunities to not only celebrate our country, but also be motivated to try to work to save her.
Yeah. Well, to talk about this. So you're now the Republican nominee, but what does it look like for you now? Obviously, you were kind of not really an intense challenge in the Republican primary there, but now you're in a general election setting, and I guess it's just you're still doing the blocking and tackling.
Absolutely, no, and I'm so grateful and humbled to be on the same ticket with other Republican nominees. We've got a really, really stellar lineup. We've got great party leadership from our chairman all the way down to grassroots levels, but complacency is the killer, and we cannot be complacent about this election. We've got to have a good turnout across the board. We can't just rest on our laurels and assume that just because I think it's, again, a high likelihood that all statewide constitutional officers elected this fall will be Republican. We have got to stay engaged. We've got to get more people involved and active in the party. And we also have some really contested and on the line elections throughout the state, local elections, some state legislative races, some House seats that we can flip, as well as our congressional races as well. So, even if, odds are I'll probably win in November, I need to be spending every moment trying to make sure people get out to vote in August and in November. And so that's what's my focus. I was at a forum in Monroe County last night, but we have got to get high Republican turnout in the special election in August. District 2 is now majority Republican, but it is not an overwhelming majority. Shamari Figures is viewed as a rising star in the Democrat Party. As we saw 2 years ago, he's got the support of Hakeem Jeffries and the DCCC and, Obama. And so he's going to try to keep that seat. So we've got to have a strong turnout in August to let them know that there's no chance of that. Same with District 7. The Democrat majority in District 7 is not as large as it once was. That seat is flippable if we have a high Republican turnout. But we have got, in order for the nominee for District 7 to actually gain some momentum and get some national support, the Republicans in District 7 have got to turn out on August 11th as well. So my focus is doing everything I can to make sure that we have a good Republican turnout on August 11th. And then between August and November, I'm going to be helping those congressional candidates, helping Rex Reynolds up in North Alabama, helping Fred Kelly down in Southwest Alabama. We have got to make sure that we keep all of these House seats in districts that looked kind of purple in the primary, and that we also are able to flip some House seats as well. So it's all hands on deck, and every single Republican nominee needs to be out there working for the party and working for our fellow nominees.
Well, talk about this. So you win the election as Secretary of State, and this has been a chronic issue in Alabama primaries for a long, long time, where you just have this low turnout. I don't think it's a responsibility, but is there anything at that level as the state's chief election officer can do to increase turnout, or at least push turnout, or do something to get voters more engaged? Like, what is it even the responsibility of an office like that?
Well, I mean, as the state's top election official, I think it's not just administering, you know, elections themselves, but also ensuring that our elections are reflective of the people that live here, that as many rightful voters in this state are engaged, and that we count every single legal vote, and we don't count any vote that is not legal in this state. And so I certainly have a lot of goals with respect to engagement, trying to get more young people registered to vote, trying to get more young people to volunteer on election day. You know, I think overwhelmingly Alabamians under 50, just due to COVID and technology, a lot of young people have flexible work schedules, or they can, you know, they're not necessarily punching in a clock from 9 to 5. And, you know, if you have a flexible work schedule, there is no reason why you should not be volunteering to be a poll worker or to help with elections, because we desperately need the next generation of Election Day volunteers to step up and learn from. We've got a world of Election Day workers that are, you know, over 70. And these folks are very knowledgeable, but they're not going to be around forever. And so we need to be recruiting the next generation of Election Day workers. But voting is a habit, you know, and I think if we can instill that habit in young people when they turn 18, I mean, I remember, so I didn't turn 18 until the February after the 2004 presidential election. I was so upset that I didn't get to participate in that election, and I registered to vote as soon as I turned 18. But if we can get other young people to, you know, to desire to participate in this process, to understand that this is their future, and they need to again, not only vote, but they need to take an active role in helping ensure that these elections are secure. So that's certainly part of my platform, and will be an objective that I'm committed to executing when I'm in office.
Joined by Caroline Dobson here on the program. She's a candidate for Secretary of State in the general election on November 3rd, representing the Republican Party. Is this, this is like a question on the text line, that there's just too many elections and there's sort of an election fatigue. We you know, we go through a municipal election cycle, and we go through runoffs, and then we go through a general election cycle. Then we go all over a year, and then the campaigning is very, very intense. Now this year we have primary runoff, a special election primary, general election, that a lot of it just becomes like kind of background noise for a lot of the public.
No, I mean, I understand that. And that's why I think it's really important too, that information about voting and where you vote and how you vote is very accessible to voters. I think there was a lot of confusion with municipal elections coming on the heels of the presidential election. You know, not that long afterwards, a lot of folks who are engaged, who follow politics, don't realize that municipal elections are administered by city clerks, whereas all other elections are administered by your probate judge. So I think it's also certainly incumbent on the Office of Secretary of State to be proactive in making it as simple as possible, as painless as possible for rightful voters in this state to know where they need to go. And so it's also my goal, of course, as well, to work with county commissions to make sure that that our precincts reflect, you know, changing population density centers, that people aren't having to wait hours and hours to vote, because that's disenfranchisement as well. I think we, you know, all agree that voting on election day is the way to ensure secure elections. Of course.
Do we lose you there, Caroline? I think we got it. She connected to her car. Caroline Dodson, we'll hold here for her. See if she reconnects. Text line 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program here. Let's see what we can do. We could just call her back. Anyway, so we're talking about it, and the idea of a election fatigue was to question it. So you have election, and people get tired of voting, and I think that contributes to the low voter turnout. Hey, Caroline, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, I think we whatever you connected to your car, and we got to hear.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on the road today.
We heard your children back there singing.
I'm sorry.
It happens to me all the time, especially when now we have relocated and the Bluetooth will connect to my phone during while I'm on air sometimes. So.
Well, I stepped outside of the car, and I guess it got reconnected, but sorry about that. Am I on air currently?
You are on air.
Okay, yes. Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. But yes, that is a family affair, and we are all hands on deck this summer trying to keep Alabama red. But again, another reason for election fatigue is due to the fact that, you know, we had the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act that was unconstitutionally being used by radical left activists to try to impose more Democrat seats on the state of Alabama. So, you know, once we have this special election in August, again, I'm grateful for it because it will gain us at least one more, hopefully two more Republican seats in Congress. But, you know, if you're irritated about that, we wouldn't have a need for that if federal courts had not undermined the Alabama legislature in allowing the Alabama legislature to draw districts that reflect the values of this state, the conservative values of this state.
You feel like we're on a path to 7-0 map, or at least a map that would favor 7-0?
Well, I think it all depends on if Republicans actually get out to vote in August and again in November. Last night in the Monroe County Courthouse, you know, the setting for To Kill a Mockingbird, we got to hear from two of the Republican candidates for Congressional District 7, both of which gave really compelling talks. I mean, they're both committed to trying to defeat Terry Sewell. That district now has a lot more red counties. And so I think and I think too, you know, there have certainly been some Republicans in old Congressional District 7 that because of just the overwhelming majority of Democrats in that district, it kind of felt resigned and maybe they didn't vote. Maybe they didn't feel like there was a path or a chance, but there definitely is now. And so every single Republican in that district, which is where my parents live, a lot of my family live. It's what, you know, where I call home is in that district, and we cannot be represented by Terry Sewell. There's a reason that part of the state is the poorest part of the state and one of the poorest parts of the country. And it's because it has been under the cloud of a Democrat congressman for the past 30 plus years. So it's incredibly important that every single Republican gets out in November, but also again, gets out in August, because that nominee, Republican nominee in Congressional District 7 is going to need to be able to get national support. And they can do that if a lot of Republicans get out, if we can show, you know, Speaker Johnson and all of the Republican members of the House that there is momentum and that we can flip it in November.
Yeah, and we'll wrap it up on this. Just getting to that point and doing it, and you'll have to, you know, let's say today that happens in 28 or 30. Administer the elections, make sure everybody's aware of what congressional district they're in, doing all the blocking and tackling necessary to get a 7-0 map. I mean, if the legislature does it, then in part got to be your job to probate judges around the state, et cetera, to the clerks, et cetera, to get this going. Is that something, you know, that you've given much thought to?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and again, we've got a lot of different district lines for different purposes too. So that's where, again, I think we can do a lot more on educating voters, not just about what congressional district they're in, but, you know, now we have PSC districts that have different lines. And so making sure folks know which PSC district they're in, I think, incredibly important that folks have a better understanding of what state Board of Education district they're in. So again, it can be confusing, but it's going to be my job to make it as accessible and as palatable as possible to every single voter in this state so that they know, you know, where they are and who they're voting for. And then, of course, where to go to vote, make that spoon feed that as much as possible, because, it is a commitment. You have to prioritize voting on election day, and any hindrances or obstacles to that is going to decrease the turnout. So we've got to get turnout up and got to make that information readily accessible.
Carolee, folks want to check out more about your campaign, where can they look?
Yes. Well, please check us out at DobsonForAlabama.com. We're also on social media, Facebook, Instagram, X, Truth Social. And again, you'll be seeing me on the campaign trail. I'm not taking it easy. I'm working hard to make sure that we not only stay red, but when it comes to some of these critical local races and state legislative races, that we flip some seats. And I also just want to say for your listeners in Mobile, I'm certainly saddened by the loss of Sheriff Cochran and also Senator Roberts, and thinking about the loss of two great leaders for the area. And certainly, their families will be in my prayers.
Carolee Dobson, ladies and gentlemen. Carolee, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you. Sorry for the hiccup.
That's no problem. It. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I know I need my rest, but if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey! Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers. People get out of our way wherever we go.
Come and day alive like I do every night from the heart of Uranio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap song. Here's open everybody out in Radio Land. Find the love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Up, oh, somebody's huffing the grievance pipe this morning. Look at the price of beef, try to buy a house or car, tell me that the economy is good. Well, don't eat beef. You go eat some pork. It's too expensive. It's not as if people are starving. See, people are madder now. What is the difference between 2017 and now with Doug Jones? Because you just don't have an election with one race on the ballot. People aren't mad enough to vote Democrat Party in Alabama up and down the ballot. You got to lose. Say Nolan Wells' name. She's still butthurt about losing to a black man. Shamari figures. Dobson is only 39. Woof. Yeah, like I said, someone's huffing the grievance pipe this morning. And they text her, and I asked her about this. There are just too many elections. She's like, we should try to consolidate some of that. But they don't do that. Why don't we have municipal elections during cycle elections? Because they don't want your municipal government elections to be partisan. That they like municipal government being not ideological. I believe that. Yeah, what if you had to elect your mayor? I mean, Mobile was not going to elect a Republican mayor. They may try to brand a mayor as Republican, but not one with an R next to his name or her name. People, because their voting behavior is just check the box next to R&D. And it's just true in a lot of places. So you get more moderation in municipal government in the state than you do at state level or federal level. Chris. Hey, Jeff, one thing to be aware of is a poll worker. You're expected to show up at the polls 6 a.m. and will be lucky to get out by 8 p.m. that night. It makes for a very long day. That's true. Some elections are different than others, though. They're not all that intense. 251-343-0106. Got a ton of text to get to on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.